Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Hi, it's Patrick Cox here, and it's time again to talk sports, or sport, depending on your preferred English. We have three stories. First up, the universal language of referees. Yellow cards, red cards, they didn't always have them. Sometimes they relied on words, sometimes disastrously. Also, soccer commentators on Spanish language TV here in the US, the way they refer to players, especially to the color of the player's skin, well, you wouldn't hear the same things on English language commentary. But is it offensive? And speaking of offensive, Canada has its very own Washington Redskins, the Edmonton Eskimos. Okay, first, referees. As usual, there have been officiating controversies at this World Cup. Was it a penalty? Was it offside? Did he bite the guy? But one thing that's been pretty much confined to the past now is communication breakdown. Players and officials not understanding each other because they don't speak a common language. I say that, but there was actually one game that was something of a throwback. It was the very first game in this World Cup, the Brazil-Croatia game. Brazil won thanks to a dodgy penalty. The Croatians, they were incensed about the penalty being given, but they were especially incensed because the Japanese referee didn't speak any language that they spoke. They couldn't actually state their case. Here's Croatian player Vedran Čoluka.
He was speaking Japanese. He was speaking in Japanese, so it was really difficult to communicate with him.
Now, as crazy as that seems, it's nothing compared to what can only be described as the mother of all World Cup miscommunications, something that led to the introduction of those yellow and red cards. Here's The Big Show's Nina Porzucchi.
Ever wonder what players are saying to the referee on the field? Peter Walton has heard it all. He is a former Premier League referee. But when he, or any FIFA ref, for that matter, talks back to players, it should be in English and not Japanese or any other language. FIFA refs take English courses to learn the basics of what they need to know to communicate on the field.
Off, for example, is universal, and everybody knows what off means when you red card a player.
Not always so. The red card was actually born out of a misunderstanding about off on the field. The year is 1966. The World Cup is being hosted in England, and it's a tense quarterfinal match between host England and Argentina. The referee is German. 35 minutes into the game, the referee calls a foul against Argentina. Argentina's captain, Antonio Ratin, questions the foul. The problem is, he said later in an interview, he was speaking Spanish, which the ref didn't understand. Things get increasingly heated. There are wild gesticulations, raised voices in various languages. And then the German referee sends Ratin off.
And Ratin, the captain, is sent off.
Because there was miscommunication, because of a language barrier, and also because of some body language issues, the referee didn't convey his message across to Ratin, or Ratin didn't pick it up, and stayed on the field.
Ratin refused to walk, stopping the game for 8 minutes, an eternity in soccer. He finally did leave the field, and the game resumed. But most importantly, that moment of complete breakdown in communication forced FIFA to innovate.
And FIFA said, look, we've got to have a way of communicating to the players and to the public at large when there's been some disciplinary sanction.
The idea came from the head referee of those 1966 World Cup games, a man called Ken Aston. Aston was stopped at a traffic light one day, and it suddenly occurred to him. Yellow, take it easy. Red, stop. You're off. And so the red and yellow cards were born. They were first used in the 1970 World Cup held in Mexico, and have since become a symbol of soccer. As soon as the ref puts his hand in his pocket, the players, the coach, the entire crowd knows. In fact, the act is so entrenched that you don't even need the cards themselves. Referee Peter Walton found this out the hard way during one Premier League match, when in the middle of the field, he reached into his pocket and,
to my dismay, found that I'd left my red and yellow cards in the locker room. There I was in front of a worldwide TV audience, and what did I do? So I just put my hand in the pocket and pulled out this imaginary card and held my hand aloft with no card in it and said to the player, there you go, there's your caution. If you Google my name on YouTube now, you'll have a laugh yourself.
It is quite a funny video. For the world, I'm Nina Porzucchi.
And you can, of course, see that video at pri.org/language. Here in the US, there are record ratings for World Cup games on TV. And you have your choice of whether to watch with English commentary on ESPN and ABC or in Spanish on Univision. Felix Sanchez is doing just that. He's watching on Univision. Sanchez is the co-founder of the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts. He's primarily an English speaker. He also speaks Spanish. And he was surprised at what he heard when he started listening to the Univision commentary, as he told the big show's Marco Werman.
Univision is trouncing ESPN in the ratings, and part of that reason is that English language leaning Latinos like myself join for more authentic experience with Univision, but sometimes we get surprised by some of the things we hear.
Like what?
Most recently was characterization related to an Afro-Costa Rican player describing him not by his last name, but by the color of his skin, calling him Moreno. It was alarming at first.
You also wrote on Facebook about other terms that you heard on Univision, like greña. Can you just kind of explain their meaning to non-Spanish speakers like myself?
Greña really means kind of messy hair, but some individuals think of it as referring to African-American hair and also describing it as nappy hair. Mm. When English language-leaning Latinos watch Spanish language programming, there is a culture clash that occurs because the kind of social progress that we live in our mainstream world doesn't always seem as reflected in programming that is not English language programming.
So how do these words then kind of get perceived in Latin America, like in South America?
I think they are very comfortable with the use of these kinds of descriptors. And therein lies kind of the issue, which is that regardless of the fact that it's being broadcast in Spanish, it's still by a U.S. broadcaster that must abide by American standards and American sensibilities. Now, the good news to all of this was that the president of Univision Sports reached out to me. There have been no other incidents that I have heard or that anyone has relayed to me. And I think that they were extremely sensitive at wanting to address these kinds of occurrences because they recognize that the audience that has tuned in, some 42 million actually since their beginning coverage, that many of them are, as I said, English language leaning Latinos who might see or feel or experience things differently, even if it's in another language.
Felix, let's just think for a moment about language, style, and cultural context, because I don't want to defend ethnic slurs in any way, but the way in which language is used when talking about soccer, I mean, it's very distinctive. It's a style, and one that, honestly, the American commentators just don't have. The Brits, oddly, get a bit more excited than our soccer commentators, but the Spanish speakers are the best, even if you don't understand them. Do you really want to water down the style and make it just like, you know, our bland American commentary?
Well, that's an interesting question. We don't want to minimize, we don't want to maximize either what's occurred because most of it has not continued. But it shows you the challenges that we have. For those of us who look at image construction, words matter. Univision responds instantly because they want this audience and they recognize that there has to be adjustments linguistically because we're not necessarily in the same worlds. We're one foot in each world.
So now that you've got a little iota of World Cup fever, who are you rooting for, Felix?
Well, I'll be rooting for USA, and I'll be rooting for Mexico.
Felix Sanchez directs the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts. Felix, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And since we posted that interview online, there have been a ton of comments, well worth reading, some questioning Felix Sanchez's interpretation of the Spanish commentary, especially what some of those words mean or suggest from one Spanish-speaking country to the next. Felix has also posted some pretty spirited responses. I'll post a link at pri.org/language. Perhaps the biggest story recently as regards bigoted language in sports, it's been the news that a federal trademark board has ruled against the NFL's Washington Redskins. The board said the team should be stripped of its trademark protections because the Redskins' name is, quote, disparaging to Native Americans. The ruling, it doesn't force the team to abandon the name, but it does kind of pile the pressure on team owner Dan Snyder. He's very much stuck by the name. And this could have a knock-on effect on other sports teams with potentially offensive names, not just here in the US, of which there are several, but across the border too, in Canada. Here is the Big Show's Andrea Crossan.
In the interest of full disclosure, I should say up front that I am part Native American. I'm not an Atlanta Brave or a Chicago Blackhawk or even a Cleveland Indian. My grandmother was from the Tsleil-Waututh Nation in Western Canada. But hey, Tsleil-Waututh is a bit wordy for a baseball jersey. And in Canada, the battle over the use of the word redskin has already been fought. Last year, Ian Campo filed a human rights complaint against a minor league football team called the Nepean Redskins.
It's completely racist.
Campo is an Ojibwe hip-hop artist with the band A Tribe Called Red. Here he is speaking to the CBC.
You're calling a demographic of people a slur, a word that's in dictionary defined as racist, and marginalizing by skin color. It doesn't get more racist than that.
When the football team took to the field this year, it was as the Nepean Eagles. Now many Canadian activists would like to see another team name retired.
We'll find out who's starting a lot earlier for the Edmonton Eskimos. Ryan Grace Mullen boots it.
They are the Edmonton Eskimos, a pro football team in Edmonton. A lot of people think the term Eskimo is offensive. It's mostly been replaced by Inuit. Daniel Johnson is a Native Studies researcher in Edmonton. Johnson says it's wrong to use people as caricatures.
Well, obviously, things change. Times change. I don't really buy the argument that the team names are a great tradition or the team names are honoring Indigenous people, so they shouldn't be changed. I think when you have large numbers of people, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, asking for the names to be changed, I think that's a good indication of where opinion is going on that.
In the U.S., pressure to change the Washington Redskins name came all the way from the top. President Obama said last year that he would think about changing the name if he owned the team. So far, there hasn't been that kind of outcry over the Eskimos. The team downplays the use of the word. They don't have images of Eskimos wearing parkas on their gear. And there's no version of a tomahawk chop crowd cheer or a grinning Chief Wahoo. The team's owners aren't budging on the name change either. So for now, it seems unlikely they'll be called the Edmonton Inuit anytime soon. For the World, I'm Andrea Crossan.
Okay, that's it for this week. See you on Facebook at the World in Words page or on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. And check out all the other podcasts in the Soundworks network, One with Farai, Sideshow, and Radio Ambulante Unscripted. Thanks for listening. More soon.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.